Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for Thursday, December 19th, 2013. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. Also this half hour, we'll have cash grain analysis from Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing in Windsor, Illinois. In agricultural news, tax credits advantageous to farmers are set to expire at the end of the year. We'll have that in other stories. Lisa Braltz gets three generations of women in one room to talk about homemade Christmas candy in her latest edition of In My Backyard. And well, the latest on agricultural weather from Mike Tanura of T-Storm Weather in Chicago. It's all on the Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and service geared specifically to the agricultural community.
Let's see how future settled on this Thursday afternoon. Hard red winter May wheat, 653 and three quarters, down 2 3/4. July, 654, down 2 1/4. Soft May wheat, 617 1/2, down 1 3/4. July, 621, down 1 1/4. March corn, 430 1/2, up 5 1/2. July, 445 1/2, up 5. January soybeans, 1327, up 3. July, 1293, up 6. January soybean meal, 442.10, up 90 cents. January soybean oil, 39.33, up 27. December live cattle, 131.85, up 90. January feeder cattle, 166.92 1/2, up 87 1/2. And February lean hogs settled at 86.37 1/2, and they were up 2 1/2. And those are the settlements from this Thursday afternoon.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM. Their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Looking at meteorologist Gruliner's weather highlights, he says snow and a wintry mix of precipitation will occur across the upper U.S. Midwest tonight and Friday. Snowfall of a dusting to 3 inches will be possible, with some ice accumulation from Iowa and northern Illinois to a part of Michigan. A generalized rain and snow event will impact the U.S. beginning in the southern plains and delta Friday into Saturday, before intensifying and spreading northeast through all of the lower and eastern Midwest and Atlantic coast states during the balance of the weekend and on into Monday morning. The storm will be a significant rain event initially, with some snow falling behind the event. Moisture totals will range from 1 to 3 inches and locally more from the delta into the heart of the lower eastern Midwest. Snow accumulations from Kansas to Wisconsin and western Michigan may also range from 3 to 8 inches, with local totals to 10 inches.
Support comes from Country Financial. Country Financial is hosting farm information sessions throughout Illinois from December to March. Topics include updates to the federal crop insurance program, the Farm Bill, and how to use grain marketing and crop insurance together to manage risk. Registration information is on their crop update website at countrycrop.com/update.
Joining us on the telephone to talk about the markets is Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. Good Thursday afternoon, Dan.
Hi, Dave.
There's a saying among some long-time, old-time traders that says if the market rallies into Christmas, after Christmas it often breaks into New Year's. Is that the possible pattern this time around?
Well, soybeans would maybe be the most vulnerable to some kind of break, but they did a good job of shaking off yesterday's big reversal decline here today. We did see some follow through to the downside, but at the end of the day, beans came back and closed higher. I suppose if we would rally up through Christmas, then, you know, the people that did buy the market here this week for a rally into Christmas would maybe take some profits, you know, New Year's Eve or something like that. But the market itself has been trading sideways for the most part. If you look at the last 3 weeks, we haven't really done much but spin our tires inside a trading range. But, you know, I think the way the market wants to act, and then when you look at traders' commitments and whatnot, the corn market is a lot of the speculative crowd and the fund crowd, and even, you know, mentally farmer crowd, market advisory crowd, commercial crowd, everybody wants to be basically short and bearish the corn market. And I think that has kind of laid the groundwork here for this market to maybe have a bounce as we go into the end of the year. I look at March corn futures today, and you look at it on a lead futures basis. We did manage to close above the 50-day moving average on a lead daily today, and we came within a couple pennies or a penny of the December high that was posted with the December 13 contract before it expired, up around 432. So if there's any kind of follow-through today in the corn market above this 432, I think we would find some buy stops that could maybe generate a rally into the November high on a lead basis at 438 to find some more buy stops. So I'm kind of friendly the corn market, at least over the between now and the end of the year, for some short covering activity to maybe reach up into the, you know, 440s or something like that. Not a big rally, but one that would at least be noticeable compared to what we've experienced over the past 6 or 8 weeks.
And soybeans would also do likewise?
Soybeans, the thing that soybeans have going for them is export sales. Now, today's number was less than what everybody was looking at. The trade was kind of looking at something around 800,000 tons, and it came in around 500,000 tons. But the way we are selling beans and the way we are shipping beans out, we are going to exceed USDA's current export projection number by the end of January, unless something begins to turn fairly quickly. And if that is the case, then that tells you that USDA is going to have to make some upward adjustments in both crush and export demand on the January report, and that would probably trace out a balance sheet with ending stocks number that would suggest that the bean market needs to do some price rationing. So that would signal that this bean market has more room to go to the upside. Technically, like I mentioned earlier in our conversation, is that we had a big reversal down. I think it was kind of generated by bull spread liquidation on the soybeans, and that was selling out the longs on the front month and buying back the short months in the back end. And I think just calling it a year before Christmas week. That did show some follow-through here this morning with the disappointing export sales number, but when it was all said and done, export demand is just so strong that we are in a almost a rationing type mode for soybeans. So I think soybeans are trying to pull out of a 6 to 7 week cycle low in here and take a run to the upside as we go on into January.
And briefly, some analysis of wheat, please.
Wheat. I'll probably you'd sum that one up as the dog of the bunch. I thought corn was the dog up until the last few weeks. And ever since, you know, Canada came out with a big, large wheat production number, the wheat market has been in a tailspin because it had been building in a tighter balance sheet in the world markets and the U.S. market. And even today, our exports on wheat came in twice what the trade was looking at. So we do have good export demand for wheat, but wheat still wasn't able to finish higher today. But I think a lot of that could have been unwinding of spreads. There was probably some people, maybe long wheat, short corn, or long wheat, short soybeans, and they unwound some of those spreads. So you do get some false signals a little bit here during the month of December, especially as you get toward the light volume trade that we're going to experience next week.
Thank you, Dan.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises, and he is in Mandeville, Louisiana. In agricultural news, roughly 50 tax credits and business deductions expire at the end of 2013, amounting to roughly $54 billion in potentially lost tax breaks for 2014. The big ones are a couple that most farmers use to offset income, bonus depreciation, and Section 179 deductions. Those incentives amount to nearly $41 billion in potentially lost tax savings for 2014. Senate Finance Committee Chairman Max Baucus says a tax extension bill may be considered in early 2014. President Barack Obama plans to nominate Darcy L. Vedder for Chief Agricultural Negotiator in the Office of the United States Trade Representative. Vedder is now Deputy Undersecretary for Farm and Foreign Agricultural Services. According to USDA's website, Vedder oversees the department's international activities. She has key responsibilities in international trade negotiations and export assistance programs. From 2007 to 2010, she was an international trade advisor on the Democratic staff on the Senate Finance Committee. Vedder is from Aurora, Nebraska. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Support comes from the Black Dog Smoke and Ale House, serving barbecue beef brisket, pork shoulder, ribs, chicken, and more, slow-cooked over a wood-fired smoker. The Black Dog, 201 North Broadway in downtown Urbana. Open Sunday through Thursday, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m., and Friday and Saturday, 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. And from Common Ground Food Co-op, now at Lincoln Square Mall, featuring organic and local foods grown right here in Illinois. Learn more on their website at www.commonground.coop.
Coming up next, it's not often Lisa Brock gets three generations of women in one room to talk about anything, much less a particular type of homemade Christmas candy they make. candy that is immediately adored by anyone who tries it. But that's exactly what happened when she visited with the Delaney-Snyder women in this episode of In My Backyard.
There are so many stories I could relay that Teresa Delaney, Molly Delaney, and Ellie Snyder told me, like the time a batch of cookie dough was fed to Teresa's childhood dog on purpose, or the summer Molly spent growing and preserving a household's food, or tales Ellie told of homemade cookies being quietly stuffed into teachers' lunchboxes as a surprise. But since it's the holidays, you need to know about the peppermint patties, and maybe a little about caramels, and that the holidays are the best time to share food and food traditions with your family and friends.
Ashley, you got one toy that you could pick out of the Sears Roebuck catalog, and that's what you got. But we always had lots of good food, and the candy, especially at Christmas, was great because that's something we all liked. And we had plenty of it. So I remember caramels. I don't remember we made much fudge, but the caramels and the peppermint patties were what we actually used an awful lot around Christmas time. Oh, yeah, it was a treat because we really didn't get many treats. There, having 10 in the family, there was a lot of treats that you had to make. And my mom was a good cook, And she was always baking bread or pie. She never ever bought anything like that she made all by herself.
The mint patties were my mom and this group of women from the church made candy for the Christmas bazaar at church every year. And so they would gather together, and that they made mint patties, they made divinity, they made peanut brittle, they made hard candy, and they made caramels. And I was around that. I was the youngest in my family, so when everybody else was at school, I was actually probably the youngest in that group of women's children. But everybody else was at school. I got to go over to Mrs. Mormino's house when they made the candy. So I was there. I mean, I learned it from watching my mom, and then I made it when my kids were little, and then Ellie actually wanted to make it for her friends, and so then I taught her how to do it. We all, then when we left home, we learned how to make these mint patties. So it wasn't really Christmas unless we had mint patties and caramels. And my brother decided he was going to make them and take them to work one year. But no one told him that peppermint oil and peppermint extract are not the same thing. So he, not knowing that, it just said a half teaspoon of peppermint. It didn't say peppermint oil, and he made them with peppermint extract and then took them to work, and he was so mad at us because no one had told him that you needed peppermint oil to be able to make these mints, and he said they tasted like mouthwash, but he was really upset with us for not sharing that little bit of information with him. He did have the recipe, but the recipe, I'm sure what happened, so this was before, you know, we had the cookbook, but also before the internet was available, and we would all just call my mom at Christmas time, and you'd say, "Mom, read this recipe to me," and she'd read it to us over the phone. And I'm sure what happened is she said a half teaspoon of peppermint and didn't specify extract or oil, because of course you would know it was oil. I mean, who used peppermint extract for mint patties? So he just didn't know, because he rolled them out. I mean, all of us as kids sat there and patted them and rolled them out together. But he didn't actually make them.
So I made the mint patties for my friends when I was in the seventh grade, and they were just like, "Oh, these are the best things ever. They're so delicious. We want them all the time." And it's even, so I've made them other years for Christmas, and I give them out in little bags, and they're like, "Oh, Ellie, we love you so much. Thank you. Thank you for these mint patties. They're so tasty. We're going to take them home and share them with our families, or maybe we won't share because we want them all for ourselves because they're so yummy." And it's even expanded, like, outside of Christmas. One year, I know I had a friend, and it was her birthday. And I was like, "I really have no idea what to get you for your birthday. What should I get you for your birthday?" And she told me, "Don't get me a present. Just make me a batch of mint patties all for myself." And I remember I took white chocolate on top of the dark chocolate. I spelled out a happy birthday. And then I arranged them on the plate. And then I think I snuck them into her house because she didn't want my other friends to see that she had them. It might only take 30 seconds to go buy a bag of peppermint patties at the store. But if you take the couple of hours to make them at home, you will, number one, have more fun. And number two, it will be more delicious. And number three, you'll have better memories to go along with it.
For In My Backyard and with the Delaney Snyder Women of Wisconsin and Illinois, this is Lisa Braltz. Happy holidays.
Joining us on the telephone to talk about the cash grain market is Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing out of Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon, Matt.
Hey, good afternoon, Dave.
Heard from Dan Zwicker just a few minutes ago, and he was a little bit friendly the corn market into the beginning of the new year. How about you?
Yeah, I don't disagree with Dan by any means. I think on a flat price action, and maybe some on the board as well, you probably look for a little bit of a bump in here. I think, you know, there's a lot of positions that are kind of unwinding here, a little evening up at the end of the year, and with funds heavily short, you know, you would see maybe a little bit of bounce there. And then also, I think there's a lot of cash needs that maybe in the short run are not being met as quickly as maybe some places are looking for it. So, you know, there's a little bit of a basis pop here and there. Whenever you think about it, you know, it's almost ridiculous how much difference there is between corn ownership and bean ownership on the farm. So it's going to be interesting to see what we have happen here to the end of the year.
Well, I do know that whenever I talk to the elevators or talk about basis to people, they all tell me that less corn is sold than generally speaking for this time of year.
Yeah, and you know what, Dave, you could have said that going into the harvest, through the harvest, and now. And so that's kind of been a general theme we've had for quite some time, which is not surprising considering, you know, we've had to really wean ourselves away from some awfully high prices of corn in the past 12 months. And so there's no question there's a lot more corn ownership, especially relatively speaking, than beans. There's very little bean ownership compared to corn.
And I would think that producers looking at this board and looking at basis and thinking, can I get something close to $5, and considering that a lot of producers got pretty good money for soybeans, are going to be pretty tight holders and wait to see what happens into the spring.
You know, I think they'll be pretty tight holders. I mean, obviously, a lot of guys, I think, have some money in their pocket from some awfully good bean prices and decent yields. But on the other hand, there are bills to pay, of course. And so when you look at this corn market, you got to just understand that at some point there's probably going to be a decent amount of corn going to town. I mean, obviously, there's a big crop out there. It's got to come to town. And where that kind of plays out, I don't know. I mean, I see the bean market being awfully volatile going into the South American harvest. But on the corn market, I see it as not being maybe quite so volatile, but chance for a little bit of movement. But I don't see a ton of upside there.
What about in the soybean market? Well, it's a little bit more on that side. What do you see basis going into the new year there?
Well, I think basis on beans is going to be fairly interesting because at some point we're all going to realize there's not very many beans out there. And so, you know, maybe as far as basis goes, a guy may really come out in good shape by holding on to his beans. But from a flat cash price action, you know, I'm just not maybe as optimistic that you're going to see a big increase in bean prices simply because as we do start to harvest in South America, I think, you know, we always open ourselves up to the cancellations and switching to new crop on beans. So
very quickly then your prices.
Okay, 415 on cash corn, 430 for next fall, 1324 for cash beans, 1130 for next fall, Dave.
Thank you very much,
hey,
Matt. Yep. That's Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing, and he is in Windsor, Illinois. It's Oatmeal Muffin Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1732, the first issue of Poor Richard's Almanac was published by Benjamin Franklin. Almanacs were very popular books in colonial America, containing practical household hints, puzzles, and, of course, seasonal weather forecasts. Franklin published his almanac for 25 years, and it sold as many as 10,000 copies a year. By the way, Napoleon Bonaparte considered the almanac significant enough to translate it into Italian along with the Pennsylvania state constitution.
In 1863, Frederick Walton of London patented linoleum. Previously, oilcloth had been used to cover floors. In 1871, Samuel Clemens received a patent for an improvement in adjustable and detachable garment straps suitable for vests, pantaloons, and other garments. Today we call that invention suspenders. Clemens was also something of an author, perhaps best known for Mark Twain. In 1871, Albert Jones patented corrugated paper, which could be used to make boxes, which actually came into vogue in about 1890. And in 2004, Herbert Brown died. In graduate research during World War II, he discovered a new method to produce hydrogen gas, which was used in weather balloons and later fuel cells. And that's this day in agricultural history. Joining us now for a look at agricultural weather is Mike Tenura of T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon, Mike.
Good afternoon.
A couple of things I think we ought to talk about. Let's do the one in our backyard first, and that is trying to get a handle on the scope of a pretty big storm that's headed our way over the weekend.
It is a large system. We're looking at excessive rainfall across a large area of the eastern Corn Belt and Delta. We normally don't see these types of systems at any time of the year. So to see this type of a rainfall event in December is highly unusual. We're looking at localized rainfall in excess of 4 to 5 inches across parts of Indiana, Ohio, Illinois, and possibly into Arkansas and northwest Kentucky and western Tennessee. It's hard to say exactly where this heavy rain will occur. The only thing we have high certainty in is that most areas are going to see at least 1 to 2 inches of rain, and then there should be around a 100 to 200-mile wide swath of 3 to 4 inches with localized higher amounts. This will primarily focus on the soft red winter wheat belt, though it is the winter. This is not exactly what you would ever want to see on a crop, is to see flooding-type rains, and that will also affect area rivers. This all begins on Saturday and continues into Sunday, and then it turns sharply colder and sharply drier right after that.
And is there a possibility of snow following the rain event?
Well, that is going to be the trickiest part of this forecast. It will start as rain for most of Illinois and most of Missouri, but as the system moves on to the east, it pulls colder air in behind it. That will cause some of the rain to change over to either snow or a mix of freezing rain and snow. But it looks like the highest probability for that type of scenario is more toward the Chicago area and then on to the west and southwest from there, so maybe a bit to the north and west of Champaign-Urbana. But keep in mind that while rain occurs, we should see temperatures well into the 40s and 50s across a big chunk of the eastern Corn Belt.
Let's turn our attention then to South America, where it's exactly 180 degrees opposite in portions of Argentina, or they sure could use some rain.
They could use some rain. Now, a large portion of Argentina and southern Brazil and Paraguay all saw significant rainfall over the last 30 days as a whole. The thing that's changing is that we haven't seen a whole lot of rain over the last 1 to 2 weeks. And as we look 1 to 2 weeks into the future, rain chances aren't all that great. Now, they do exist, so that always makes the forecast a little bit tricky. But the other part of the forecast that is very interesting is that we're looking at a fairly intense heat wave that began around 3 or 4 days ago in Argentina. A brief reprieve from heat is occurring today, and it occurred yesterday too, but we still saw highs in the 90s. But we'll see high temperatures across Argentina in the 90s and 100s for at least 7 more days, and more than likely a longer period than that. So you combine heat with dry weather across Argentina, you can start making arguments for a problem for its corn and soybeans, and then you expand dryness into a large portion of Brazil and Paraguay, and all of a sudden you have an interesting weather scenario developing for corn and soybeans.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
That's Mike Tenura of T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois, and that is today's Closing Market Report This is Dave Dickey.